weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
Welcome back to Weather Realness. I'm Jeff Frame, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Weather matters in aviation. It affects nearly every aspect of flights. And sometimes, it can cause safety concerns. Some hazards like thunderstorms, icing, and turbulence can make flying somewhat unpredictable. That's where aviation meteorologists come in.
Before any flight takes off, Southwest Airlines is watching the weather at each origin and destination city and everywhere along the way in order to keep Southwest customers and employees safe. By analyzing computer models that show the atmosphere, meteorologists like me can make specific forecasts for our system. A team of experts then use our forecast to make decisions about your flight.
That was Becky Miller. She has been an aviation meteorologist with Southwest Airlines for 12 years. Before that, she was a broadcast meteorologist in Dallas-Fort Worth and Atlanta. Becky has also taught meteorology at Texas A&M University. She joins us now to talk about how aviation meteorologists keep an eye on the weather before and while pilots are in the air. Thanks for joining us, Becky.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak to everybody there.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. So what is a day in the life of an aviation meteorologist?
Well, every airline that has meteorologists, and not all of them do, we all do different things for our airlines. For UPS and FedEx, for example, the meteorologists there are more concentrating on jet stream patterns, upper level wind forecasting, because they do the long hauls over the oceans and generally fly at night. So they're more concerned with either getting into the jet stream to help save fuel or avoiding the jet stream to save fuel as well. Here at Southwest, what we are concerned with is any type of weather that's going to disrupt your flight, any type of weather that's going to cause a delay or a cancellation in the flight. We are forecasting weather that will give our decision makers the information they need to cancel flights or delay flights or thin them out. Our meteorologists do not talk directly to pilots. We don't say, hey, at that cloud, take a right. We do not cancel flights. What we'll do is we'll say, hey, you know what? There's going to be 12 inches of snow in Chicago 2 days from now between noon and three. We're going to have a hard time getting into Midway Airport during those times. So our decision makers, our managers, take that information. They look to see how many flights are already scheduled to depart or arrive midway at that day at those times. And they'll say, whoa, we've got 200 flights landing. We're not going to be able to get that many flights in there if it's snowing so much. Let's thin those flights out and maybe we'll only have three flights instead of 200 or whatever. So we are able to send our customers information saying, hey, your flight 2 days from now is going to be delayed because of snow or whatever. And so you are now given the opportunity to change your flight at no cost or make your own travel plans if you want to cancel your flight or whatever. That's what we try to do. We're giving everybody the heads up as to what weather is going to be impacting their flight so they can make arrangements ahead of time. Because the last thing we want is for a customer to get to an airport and have their flight delayed or canceled. That does happen sometimes, you know, of course, weather thunderstorms pop up and sit themselves over a field for a long time. There are some things that are extremely difficult to forecast, but are very impactful, like fog or low sea, especially on the West Coast. It's very hard to determine you know, when fog is going to move in, when is it going to move down or move out, when our ceiling's going to drop, when our ceiling's going to lift up. So there will, I'm not promising there'll never be delays or cancellations, but that's what our job is to minimize these delays or cancellations. There are many other things that we do during the day. We divide our, first of all, we fly to over 100 cities in the United States, in Mexico, in the Caribbean, We are now adding Alaska. We've added Hawaii. So we fly internationally as well as throughout the U.S. So we're responsible for forecasting the weather for all of those cities. It's a lot of cities. So we divide up the sectors. My sector is usually the eastern sector. So I cover from Maine all the way down to Miami and then out into the Caribbean. Central sector would be from Minnesota down to South Texas and into central Mexico. And then the West Coast would include all of our western stations, generally from Denver westward and then up to Hawaii and then down to up to Alaska. So when I get into work, I'm looking at that East Coast. What's going on in the East? Where are weather conditions going to be favorable or unfavorable? Thankfully, in the last couple of days, I've had some easy days.
Yes, you have.
Nothing's been going on. Our central sector person has been very busy. But that's what we do. So I'm looking right now, you know, at what's going on today, tomorrow, and passing that information on to everybody that needs to know it. At least three times a day, we have meetings with other departments, other directors, and meteorology leads these meetings, telling everybody what's going to be happening the rest of the day, today, tonight, tomorrow, and so on. And then we also when we are delivering the weather, it's not like television. You know, we're not standing in front of a green screen. We're sitting, you know, in front of a map. And then we have these meetings. There's one in the morning to get you ready for the day. There's another one in the afternoon to get you ready for the night. And there's another one in the evening to get you ready for the next morning. So three of those meetings. If there are hurricanes headed our way or toward one of our stations, we have additional meetings about that. Also via email, via Zoom. I say Zoom. It's Microsoft Teams because that's what we use at work.
Right.
And then same thing for winter storms. We have the winter storm meetings, you know, it's they're very intense.
A big East Coast blizzard.
Yes, exactly. And they disrupt travel for days and days. You know, Boston, I want to say, got over 3 feet of snow with that last one. And when we're forecasting weather, there's a lot that goes into this. You know, they have to know what type of snow is falling because we've got to know what kind of de-icing fluid to use on those planes.
Oh, you have different types of de-icers. I did not know that.
Absolutely, there are. We got to know how strong are the winds going to be, because if there's a strong wind, you can't de-ice a plane because the de-icing fluid just blows everywhere. So
right.
We have to know that. We've got to know crosswinds. You know, are those winds going across the runway against you, or are they going down the runway? If there's a significant crosswind, we're not even going to launch to that city, nor can we take off from that city. So,
right. If you've ever seen any videos of planes taking off or landing during heavy crosswinds,
yep.
You don't want any part of being on that aircraft.
No, you do not. And that's what we try to do is tell people, you know, ahead of time, you're going to have some significant crosswinds. Now, what people think we do and what we don't do is what a dispatcher does. And that is to plan the route the aircraft takes from point A to point B. And I tell people, you know, our department has 14 in it in meteorology. Dispatch, mm-hmm. There's 300 people there. So people,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So people that are trying to get into Southwest Airlines with a meteorology degree, it might serve them better to become a dispatcher. You work fewer hours and you have a better schedule than mm-hmm. the meteorology department does, at least with us. So that's what a dispatcher does. And, you know, they do rely heavily on meteorology. The dispatchers will call us and they'll say, well, what do you think about this TAF?
TAF is a terminal aerodrome forecast, and they're issued four times a day by the National Weather Service. Mm-hmm. Here in central Illinois, our local office issues TAFs for Peoria, Bloomington, Normal, Springfield, and Champaign-Urbana, I believe.
So we right now use the National Weather Service TAFs for many of our cities. Other airlines will write their own TAFs. We mm-hmm. can write our own TAFs, and we do write our own TAFs for places that don't have a TAF. Like if we have to ferry an aircraft to a city, Victorville, California is one of them, for example. We ferry aircraft in there all the time. Or if we have a charter flight that's going to a city that doesn't have a TAF, then we mm-hmm. write TAF for that city. But a lot of times, you know, when the Weather Service writes these TAFs, they're writing it for, even though it says, you know, Midway or O'Hare or DFW or Dallas Love Field, they're writing it for a specific area around that field. Most of the time we'll agree with them. There are times when we don't agree with them at all. And we are restricted by those TAFs. For example, if a TAF has quarter mile visibility for 12 hours, which I have seen before, a quarter mile visibility of fog for 12 hours at some airports shuts us down for the whole day. The Weather Service, some Weather Service offices are using automated forecasts for their TAFs. And then they go in there and then they tweak them. Not all Weather Service offices tweak them. So you will see some Weather Service offices writing a TAF that is 14 lines long. They should be maybe 6 lines long. So that's an example of a forecast that is unusable to us. Now, the Weather Service writes these TAFs and they really don't have a good idea of how much airlines use them. They do a lot of these forecasts for general aviation. So we try to educate the Weather Service and we'll call them if we see a TAF like that with prevailing fog for 12 hours, we'll call them and we'll say, hey, we can't fly there because you've forecasted fog for the entire day. Do you really think this is going to happen? And they'll go, oh, no, I had no idea you had to cancel all your flights because of the forecast that I just wrote. And so we'll say, yes.
So if you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media. I'm Professor Jeff Frame with the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences. We're talking about the relationship between weather and flying with Becky Miller, a meteorologist with Southwest Airlines. She also spent many years as a television meteorologist. So tell me, what's more challenging for you? Winter weather, winter storms like snow and ice, or spring and summer thunderstorms? I know a rule of thumb is if you can, in the summer, always book your flights in the morning because in the afternoon, thunderstorms become a lot more likely and the schedule backs up during the day. But of course, with winter weather, we don't have that easy rule of thumb there that doesn't always work, by the way.
Yes, I tell that to people all the time. Always take the earliest flight in the morning you can because of the diurnal thunderstorms that we get in the south. Now, what is more challenging to forecast? You know, a lot of it depends on where you grew up. I'm from New Orleans. I'm a summer girl. I went to college and my main course of study was tropical weather and hurricane forecasting because I wanted to work for the Hurricane Center one day. That never happened. So I wouldn't say I'm a bad snow forecaster, a bad winter storm forecaster, but I have an easier time with thunderstorms, hurricanes, because it's what I grew up with. So for me, winter storm forecasting is always more challenging. Is it going to be a wet snow? Is it going to be a dry snow? Are we going to see freezing rain? Are we going to see sleet? I mean, you can look at a SKU-T and see some of that. But amounts, you know, maybe where the airport is, you'll get 4 inches of snow. But 1 mile down the street, you'll get 12 inches of snow. Buffalo, you know, might get zero snow at the airport, but they'll get 2 feet. You know, just south of the airport.
So turbulence is another big aviation weather hazard. According to the National Center for Atmospheric Research, about 65,000 flights experience at least moderate turbulence every year, and over 5,000 encounter severe turbulence. What is clear air turbulence and what causes it?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know what? We have a little committee within our meteorology department that works on turbulence reports. If any of our aircraft do run into some sort of turbulence, then our committee that's comprised of maybe 3 or 4 of us investigate that and figure out why we had that turbulence. And I'm on that committee. So I just finished up a turbulence report the other day. Clear air turbulence is turbulence that occurs for no visible reason. You're flying along and all of a sudden, you know, you hit some bumpy air. So what causes that? There are several things that cause that. First of all, if you're flying high, you could be flying very close to the tropopause, you know, where the stratosphere and the troposphere meet. So
that's up around 30 or 40,000 feet.
Correct. Yes. And if you fly through that, and aircraft do, then you can experience bumpy conditions. You've got a temperature inversion up there. Same thing, if you've got a temperature inversion a little bit lower down in the atmosphere, you can encounter clear air turbulence also. There's mountain wave turbulence. If the air is flowing over a mountain, it's going to go up and over that mountain, and it can cause a rotor wave on the lee side of that mountain, and you can encounter mountain wave turbulence there as well.
Sometimes Denver is a big, big offender of that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times you can see that on a satellite image. You can see the clouds have a specific pattern when you've got mountain waves present. Not always, but sometimes. If you have on a constant pressure level, you can have divergent winds, winds that are flowing apart from each other. And when winds fall apart from each other, then in between that area, the air rises. That can cause turbulence as well. So yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, wind shear can cause turbulence. It doesn't have to be wind shear in a thunderstorm. It can just be winds changing direction with height. Jet stream.
Or wings under the jet stream.
Exactly. Jet streams can cause clear air turbulence. Yeah, so differences in wind, differences in pressure, just to make it easier to understand. And any kind of a difference like that, difference in air density can cause turbulence. But or even clear air turbulence, if there's a plane now, you know, the dispatchers, everybody does a pretty good job. Air traffic control does a pretty good job spacing planes out between each other. So you don't often get clear air turbulence from the plane in front of you, but not very often.
Yeah, I know you mentioned wind shear and thunderstorms there. And until the early 1990s, every few years, there were terrible aircraft accidents, you know, sometimes killing dozens or even over 100 people.
Yeah.
When airplanes encountered wind shear caused by downbursts. Mm-hmm. Now, do you directly help detect these hazardous conditions or forecast them, or is that up to air traffic control and the people at the airports?
Well, ever since Delta 191 crashed in Dallas-Fort Worth back in the 80s, that was kind of the one aviation disaster that prompted Ted Fujita, I believe it was, that, you know, came up with the wind shear and downburst and everything. And since then, airports have installed wind shear detectors. So there are a lot. You'll see them if you look for them. They look like little radars around the airport. So they are wind shear detectors.
It's really a victory for science and meteorology. The last fatal airplane crash or commercial aviation crash as a result of this was near Charlotte, North Carolina in 1994, because we researched and found how to detect these downbursts that caused the wind shear that caused planes to crash sometimes near thunderstorms. It's not the lightning that people are worried about. Although, if you do have lightning near an airport, they can call a ground stop so that the people loading and unloading your bags don't get struck by lightning. But the planes, they don't really care so much, correct?
Correct. Yeah. A plane can be struck by lightning in the air and not have a tremendous issue. Yeah, it's not as bad as you would think it would be.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about weather and climate. Today, we are talking about meteorology and aviation with meteorologist Becky Miller with Southwest Airlines. Now, I know you mentioned hurricanes a bit earlier today, but hurricanes, I think, present a bit of a unique challenge in aviation meteorology, not only because, you know, like a bad snowstorm or even dense fog, they can certainly shut down an airport. But you also might want to evacuate the planes and get them out of there just because of the risk of blowing debris or strong winds, or possibly, you know, if you're right in the eye wall, the planes could flip over. Could you talk us a little bit more about how you prepare for a landfalling hurricane?
Well, first of all, we want to make sure that our planes are evacuated from those airports that are expecting a direct hit. We also want to make sure our crews are taken care of, and we want to make sure our passengers have the ability to evacuate the island or the city or whatever beforehand. So we'll start by making plans to maybe send additional aircraft in there to get additional people out before.
So schedule more flights.
Exactly. Just to get people out of there. Yeah, we start by doing that. You know, there are some people that always choose to stay. You know,
there are some people who fly in and chase the hurricane.
Absolutely, they do. Yep, yep. You don't know oftentimes how bad the hurricane is going to be, because just because a hurricane passes doesn't mean you can start flying into that particular station tomorrow. There might be debris everywhere. We had one hitting, was it Jamaica last year?
Jamaica, Hurricane Melissa. We did a show on that.
A Category 5 hurricane. These are multiple live looks right now at Jamaica, still being battered by the powerful storm. It's already turned deadly, with at least 7 lives lost across the region. Officials ordering people to shelter in place.
Yeah, and that did a lot of damage to the airport, so and to the runways, and so we couldn't fly in there for days. It could have been weeks. I don't know. I can't remember.
Up in Montego Bay on the northwest part of the island, that's where the resorts are.
Yep.
Whereas Kingston, the capital, on the east side of the island, there was some minor damage there, but they were a lot farther away from the center of that Category 5 hurricane.
Yeah. So it was a while before we could fly in there. So those are things that we have to take into consideration also. And then, of course, we set up relief flights to when we can fly in there, to bring in supplies, not only for the people that work for us, but also just the communities. I know there were many rescue flights that went into Puerto Rico after Maria. We had rescue flights going into New Orleans with supplies after Katrina that long ago. So we do a lot of work, volunteer work, even after a hurricane, that has nothing to do with passengers, but has to do with us getting relief efforts into cities. But as far as preparing for the hurricanes beforehand, we are having at least 2, sometimes 3 meetings per day on the hurricane. Well, where is it now? Well, where is it going? Well, what's changed? And, you know, I mean, just like you said, for Jamaica, it's not a very big island, but hitting one end of the island had completely different results than hitting another part of the island. One side was wiped out. The other side, where the airport was, it was not as badly hit. Just because the airport maybe didn't sustain as much damage as the other parts of the island, you still have to think of infrastructure. Do you have electricity? Do you have water? Do you have... I mean, and people say that all the time, you know, well, it doesn't look so bad to me. Well, I don't know why my flight is delayed. It's sunny where I am.
I saw some footage from some of the hurricane chasers who were down there. I looked up some of their videos. And yeah, I mean, people out in the west part of the island in more, you know, remote areas, roads were either washed out or, you know, you're going through a forest. It's not going to take a whole lot of wind. It's not going to take a Category 5 hurricane to down a bunch of trees. And folks are going to have to go out there with literal chainsaws.
Absolutely.
To open these highways back up, because you can get the supplies into the airport. But of course, then you have to get it over land to where it needs to go.
Right. Exactly right. So we try to prepare for as much of that as possible before it ever hits. And of course, if a hurricane is scheduled to hit a certain city, we'll just evacuate that aircraft. It's not, we don't leave our plane sitting around with the hurricane hitting. We don't even do that with a thunderstorm. You know, if a thunderstorm's going to hit an airport with hail, we're going to evacuate those planes from that city, or delay them getting in. Same thing with freezing rain. And mm-hmm. Going back to this TAF, you know, I can remember a time where an airport had 12 hours of freezing rain in the forecast, and it just wasn't going to happen.
That's really tough to do, because freezing rain is somewhat self-limiting, because when freezing rain is super cooled water that falls, it's snow, falls through a warm layer and melts into rain, falls back into a cold layer, it becomes super cooled. And then when it hits something cold, it freezes into ice, but that freezing actually does release a little bit of heat into the atmosphere. So it's not impossible, but it's hard to get freezing rain to last for very many hours.
Yeah. So it was 12 hours of freezing rain. Now, had we left, we had, I don't know, a lot of aircraft on the ground at this particular city. Had we left them there, had we had freezing rain every hour overnight, that next morning, we would have had all those aircraft sitting there covered in ice, encased in ice. And think of your car when it's covered in ice. You can't go out there and open the door. You can't just chip that away.
No.
That damaging your car. And now we've got all these aircraft sitting there and all the mm-hmm. supposed to take off and all the people that are supposed to come in. It's a disaster if something like that would have come true. So, you know, that's an example of a TAF that's very limiting to us, right. But also an example of why you don't want to leave aircraft in a place that's going to get bad weather, you know, overnight or whatever, whether it's a hurricane or whether it's freezing rain or even whether it's hail. You know, hail, as you know, can spew out miles from a thunderstorm, parent thunderstorm. So generally, we try to keep our aircraft 20 miles from a thunderstorm. Sometimes you can't avoid it, but 20 miles from a thunderstorm.
Right. What made you decide to pursue a career in meteorology? I've been a weather nut since I was about 6 years old. Yep. I know a lot of folks in the field kind of feel that same way. So tell us about why you decided to become a meteorologist.
You know, I think like you and me, I think almost every person I know who is a true meteorologist knew when they were a little kid that's what they wanted to do. And I just think we're so lucky that we knew that when we were younger. I knew when I was about 8 years old, growing up in New Orleans, we were hit by hurricanes, or we would have to take cover from hurricanes, or we would have to fill the bathtubs up, and we would be glued to the TV set watching. You know, when I was growing up, it was Neil Frank from the National Hurricane Center.
You know, from the standpoint of a meteorologist and forecasting, I would rather have a full-blown hurricane with a nice eye. Mm-hmm. I don't wish a hurricane on anybody. Don't get me wrong here. But it's much easier to forecast that system than this. It's just a big mess out there.
Yep.
And the problem is it's got the potential for going ahead and strengthening and doing something that could do some damage.
And I just thought, this is so exciting. It's so exciting for me to watch this man helping people and trying to warn them and keeping them updated on all these weather conditions. And I thought, that's what I want to do.
What's your best advice out there for any meteorology students? We'll wrap up with that one.
Take any course in meteorology that is offered, take it. Take all of them. I went to school at Texas A&M. We had so many meteorology classes that were offered at that time that you just didn't have time to take them all because they might not have been offered at a semester that it would have been helpful to you. I stayed in the summer to get rid of some classes to make room for those meteorology classes. And I never regretted taking any of them. I took air pollution classes. I didn't want to do air pollution at all, but I took the classes just to make sure I didn't want to do air pollution at all. You learn so much more, you know, take as many of those meteorology classes, because even though you plan on one career in meteorology, doesn't mean that's what you're going to wind up with. Never in a million years did I plan to be in television. I absolutely did not want to do that. And then I wound up going into television, and then I wound up teaching a course in it for 14 years. I had thought about aviation, but I never really did it until I finished my television career. I wanted to run the Hurricane Center. I met Neil Frank and I said, I want your job. And he said, I want your job. And at that time, I worked for the Weather Channel for like 5 minutes. And I said, you can have my job. I hate working overnights. And that's what I did at the Weather Channel. But I never planned on doing the career that I am doing right now. I love it.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Southwest Airlines meteorologist Becky Miller. Becky, thank you very much for joining us on Weather Realness.
Thank you.
Have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, what is a weather balloon? How does the data collected by one make a difference in understanding severe storms and your forecast? Answers are coming up on Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.